The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. I am Sheila Murthy, President and CEO of the Murthy Law Firm. Thank you so much for joining us for today's discussion about the Customs and Border Protection and port of entry issues at the different ports, the land port, the seaport, the airport, etc. Joining me for today's conversation and discussion are my esteemed colleagues at the Murthy Law Firm, Attorney Aaron Finkelstein, who's been with the firm like 27 years, or something more than a quarter of a century, Chris Drinan, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, a lot of time. Between the three of us, we probably have close to almost a century of practice, or longer, I think, between the three of us. And so hopefully you'll see a vibrant, lively, interesting discussion that we will touch upon issues that can affect you individually, your family, if you're a company, your employees, and hopefully you'll realize that you do need to be proactive rather than reactive in these situations. What we're seeing certainly at the Murthy Law Firm based on consultations is that the Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, is definitely continuing a scrutiny of individuals at each of these land ports, seaports, and airports, including increased inspection of people's electronic devices, cell phones, laptops, all that stuff. And some lawful permanent residents or green card holders who may have been detained because of long, long time ago criminal issues, even though since that incident occurred maybe 20 years ago, the person was allowed to travel in and out multiple times, but now they're finding they're being sent back or dealing with a potential possible removal slash deportation issue, and very much more aggressive enforcement of returning lawful permanent residents who have been outside the country for lengthy periods of time. So with that, I am going to invite Aaron to just touch briefly upon what we're seeing in terms of expedited removal orders at ports of entry.
Sure. Thank you, Sheila. So the most aggressive that I think is out there right now is really expedited removal. Expedited removal falls under a statute, INA 235B, 1, and essentially what they're looking at is either fraud or they're looking at documents that don't match up for what they think is the purpose for your admission. They have enormous amount of discretion, and if they make this determination, it can be a very, very significant problem. It not only prevents the person from entering the U.S., but it causes their visa to get canceled, and it imposes a five-year ban. Now, that five-year ban is waiverable, and I'm sure we're going to do a future podcast on NIV, on non-immigrant visa waivers, which we're probably going to speak about, but nonetheless, a five-year ban is very significant. The process to return, once you get a 235B expedited removal, and once you have this five-year ban, can be very lengthy. Employees may lose their projects, they may lose their jobs, and while the waiver is applied at the U.S. consulate, when the employee applies for the H-1B visa, it can take a long time to obtain that waiver. It's not clear when you're going to get it or if you're going to get it. There is a process for getting it first, and that process is the consular officer recommends the approval, but that's not good enough. It then has to go to the State Department headquarters, and they have to agree with that recommendation. And then even after that, CBP still, when you come into the port of entry, CBP Customs and Border Protection still has the right to decide whether to approve or deny the waiver. And as I mentioned before, the processing time is a little erratic. It could go all over the place. It used to be 6 months consistently, but now the actual time frame can vary quite a bit, and especially with the difficulties of getting appointments at the consulates, especially in India, you just don't know where it's going to leave you at the end of the day.
That does sound like quite a bit of stuff happening at the ports of entry, and clearly the five-year bar, losing a project, losing your job, you know, those are life-altering, very, very serious repercussions for the individual, the family, the employer, the business. And so I completely figure out how stressful this must be for all involved. But what are the kinds of situations, Chris, if I can have you jump in, where the CBP issues these expedited removal orders?
Thank you, Sheila. We see these most frequently in the H-1B context, in other words, for employees who are entering on H-1B visas. And expedited removal orders can happen in that context for a variety of things. It can be discrepancies in the address, vis-a-vis your work address versus your home address, whether there's an inconsistency there. If you have exaggerated experience on resumes, which unfortunately is not uncommon, you have to be careful about that. If you have an employer or an end client who cannot properly answer questions about your work assignment or where you're working, in other words, details about your employment, because CBP does sometimes call employers or clients. It does happen sometimes. And if they talk to someone at your company or at the client company and they don't know anything about you, they've never heard about you, that's going to be a problem. Now, another thing we see occasionally with some ports only, particularly for H-1Bs, if you stay out a long time, some ports seem to believe there's some sort of limit on how long you can stay outside the country. We don't see this everywhere, but some ports we do. There is no rule saying you can't be out longer than 60 days or 90 days. That's not an actual rule, but we do occasionally see people turned around, not always expedited removal, but turned around at least, if they've been outside the country for a long time. And again, that's not a real rule. It's just some ports have seemingly made that up out of whole cloth, and they're imposing that. Also, there can be questions if the contents of your luggage or your electronic devices isn't consistent with why you say you're coming to the U.S. And they can also, they have a right to look on your electronic devices. If there's anything on your phone or on your laptop that seems to indicate that the information you've given about your visit or about your employment is not accurate, that's going to be a problem. So you do want to be careful with things that you have on your electronic devices, and also things you have posted on social media. This can all come back to haunt you because the government does have the ability to see this. Now, one thing that's important is if you're a permanent resident, in other words, if you're a green card holder, you cannot be expeditiously removed is the correct term, unless you have a prior removal order. In the general course of things, if you don't have a prior order of removal or what we used to call deportation, you cannot be expeditiously removed as a green card holder. Another thing that's important to remember about this is, as Aaron mentioned, there is a 5-year bar on entering the United States if you are expeditiously removed. And that's obviously a problem, and it can be very difficult to get rid of. But you have to be careful trying to talk your way out of this, because there can be a lifetime bar for a misrepresentation. So you should be careful to be honest with whatever you're saying, because the penalties for a misrepresentation or for fraud are far, far worse than the 5-year bar.
But what can be done after an expedited removal, right? Because that's your next question. Oh, my God, this has happened. What can you do? So as lawyers, obviously, we would advise you to please keep copies of all your documents that this Customs and Border Protection or CBP has given to you. You should review the statement carefully. If there's incorrect information they've made you sign, say something that you know is clearly wrong, because once you sign it, that's considered like you agreed. Well, it sometimes is possible to challenge this order directly with the CBP, but we have seen that the willingness of the CBP depends on the specific airport, whether it's a land port, seaport, or airport, that actually issued the expedited removal order. At the Moosey Law Firm, I know we have had success in having expedited removal orders changed, for example, to a withdrawal of admission. And why is that helpful? Because you now don't have the 5-year bar. You just withdrew that request for an admission, and you can apply, go right back, go to the consulate, get a new visa, and come back, right? Your visa is canceled, but the withdrawal does not include the bar, hence no waivers are required at the consulate when applying for another visa. And again, this is critical because if you are stuck with a 5-year bar, even as Aaron explained, it would take 6 months. Now it takes 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And sometimes they never recommend it. Even after the 5-year bar is over, you might never be coming back because your life has moved on. But remember, unlike a lot of other decisions, because you're at the border, you have not yet technically entered the United States, even though you think you're in the airport, you're technically outside of the U.S. It's a notion, right? You don't have any judicial review or any other legal appeal option available to you. And so if that expedited removal order is not overturned, you will need that waiver to return to the U.S. if you want to re-enter the U.S. before that five-year bar. So, again, we are just going through some of this, but it's so important, and I know these are life-altering decisions for you and your family. So I know since I touched upon the withdrawal of admission, maybe, Aaron, you could just go about over it a little bit more because that might be intriguing for those who would be eligible.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Before I jump into that, I just want to make a point. When you're brought into what's called secondary proceedings at the port of entry, where they're going through your documentation, sometimes going through your phone, sometimes going through other things, and they're talking to you and they're creating a Q&A of your answers and your responses, and they're documenting the Q&A, if you don't ask for strongly, say, I'm entitled to a copy of that after you sign it and you don't get it, sometimes it's extraordinarily difficult, impossible to get it without months and months of delay, which could be very problematic. I just wanted to reemphasize that. And the second thing is, I'm going to say this respectfully, but forget about your connecting flight. Forget about your luggage. Forget about all the other things that you're worried about. What am I going to get? How am I going to get this? Who's meeting me? You have to focus on the moment with the FAQs, with the questions, with the Q&As, excuse me, with the questions. You need to focus on what's being said and what you're responding to, because as Sheila said, the responses, what's put on that piece of paper, is the basis for them to make a determination. And sometimes when you have to walk it back, you're sitting there consistently contradicting statements you made yourself that you've signed every piece of paper on. So don't worry about the small, focus on that moment in time. It's very important to be in the moment. That being said, the lesser of the two evils, between the officer has many times the option to either expedite remove you, or if they feel that their case isn't strong enough for an expedited removal, or if they have discretion in the case, they also have the ability to allow you to withdraw your request for admission. And that means that the CBP officer will generally say, I'm going to refuse you admission, and you can choose to withdraw your admission. If you choose to withdraw your admission, I will elect not to expedite remove you. So I'm making it your choice to withdraw your admission, but the alternative is usually much worse than taking that choice. The withdrawal of admission is definitely less severe than expedited removal because there's no five-year bar. At the same time, you still have an issue with your visa being canceled. You still have an issue with your admission being denied. You still have to purchase a plane ticket home. And you will still have to go to the consulate to reapply for the visa to be able to come back in. It is more appropriate than the expedited removal orders in most cases. It's a better choice than choosing for the expedited removal. And when you do go for the visa at the consulate, you will need to face tough questions. And sometimes the CBP officer will say, I'm going to allow you to choose withdrawal of admission, because they know that there's going to be a record made that the consular officer will be able to see. And if the consular officer makes a finding that there was fraud or misrepresentation or anything along those lines, that finding is harder to get reviewed because consulates have a doctrine of non-reviewability, and therefore makes it harder to overcome. So sometimes if a CBP officer says, I think there's fraud, I think there's misrepresentation, I think a person is misspeaking, I'm going to put very detailed notes, but I'm going to allow them to withdraw. So you must be very, very careful when you're preparing for your interview at the consulate to be ready to answer any of those questions.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay, so the other issue that we see all the time that you probably encountered, of course, is the I-94 cards, a mismatch problem, what have you. So maybe, Chris, you can just jump in and talk about some of those situations and options and solutions.
Sure, Sheila. And I know we call them I-94 cards. They're not usually cards anymore. The system has been all online for the most part for a number of years. But the I-94 basically is your record of how long you're actually admitted to the United States, how long you can stay here, how long your work authorization is for, basically how long you are lawfully present in the United States. Now, sometimes you will have a person get an I-94 expiration date that is not what they expected. Usually this happens when you enter on a visa petition, for example, an H-1B, that's got one end date, but you're using a passport stamp, in other words, an H-1B passport stamp in your passport that has a shorter end date. If the officer doesn't look at the I-797 notice, they will sometimes give you only the expiration date on the visa stamp. You should get the full validity on your I-797 notice, but you don't. That doesn't always happen. Now you have to. That's one thing I always point out to people. You have to. You actually have to give them the notice. If you just hand them your passport with the visa stamp and you don't give them the I-797 that has a longer duration, that's not their fault. I mean, you're going to get a, you're going to get the date on the visa stamp, and there's a good chance that's not going to be fixable at that point if you did not give them the actual notice so they know about it. They are not going to ask you for it. I have people tell me that sometimes. Why didn't you give them the 797? And they said they didn't ask. They are not usually going to ask. You have to affirmatively hand it to them along with your passport. Another thing that does happen sometimes is passport validity. As a general rule, CBP cannot admit you to the U.S. for a longer period of time than your passport. So you might have a visa petition that's valid for another year or two, but if your passport's expiring, you're probably only going to get that passport expiration date on your I-94. So you have to be cognizant of that. They won't always tell you that. And this all sort of folds into the issue of, yeah, it's very important to look at your I-94 when you come into the U.S. to make sure you get the correct end date. I mean, look at it right away, pull it up on your phone after you go through CBP, make sure they gave you the correct date, because it's not always going to be the date you expect, and that can be a huge problem. If you don't check and you've got a different date in there than you expected, you might find that your status is potentially expired. If your I-94 is expired, perhaps your company is going to file an extension for you, and they pull up the I-94 date, and it's already expired. That is a big, big problem. It can sometimes be fixed, but it is a big, big problem that you're dealing with. Now, how do you fix these problems? You can go to a local CBP office. It's called a Deferred Inspections Office. They have them at international airports. Not every international airport, but usually there will be one close to you. You might have to drive a little bit, but there will be one in driving distance as a general rule. And they will fix it if it is their mistake. So if you gave them your passport and the 797 notice and they gave you the wrong date, and it's not because of passport expiration, if it's a legitimate mistake by the CBP officer, they are usually, not always, depends on the office, usually willing to fix it. They will sometimes refuse to fix it if it's after the expiration date, or also, as I mentioned, they cannot give you a time longer than your passport expiration. So you could have multiple problems. You could have a shortened I-94 along with a passport that's already expired. So this can be a very complicated situation. So you can really save a lot of trouble if you just check your I-94 when you come into the country and make sure it is the date that you expect.
Thank you, Chris, and I agree 100%. Check it at the airport, because if you go in right away, they're much more likely to make that change rather than later on, because they're like, no, you did not show me that H-1B extension piece of paper. You showed me the visa stamp that was given to you before. We gave it to you correctly. You're just making up that you showed us the correct document. There's a lot of pushback. And a lot of times what we're seeing is a lot of the company attorneys will actually tell the person, you are now subject to a 3-year bar or a 10-year bar because it's been more than 365 days since that latest I-94 that is online has expired. And while that is a concern in some situations, it's not always necessarily a fact. And we have been able to, over the years, make them travel, re-enter the U.S., because it's an extremely complicated situation if you try to correct it with a non-pro-tunk within the U.S., because USCIS often will say, sorry, buddy, your last I-94 has expired, and in our eyes, you're already out of status. Whereas CBP looks at this more as like a passport expiration issue, and so there are strategies that we can employ, but there's other issues, right? So we see issues like where when you come in, the Customs and Border Protection officer may ask you to go into what's called secondary inspection to another room to look at documents in greater details. Sometimes these are just a few simple questions. Sometimes it can take hours and hours and hours. Sometimes they can just make you wait for several hours because they're busy with back-to-back-to-back-to-back flights, international flights coming into the country. Sometimes the questioning is intense. There is something, if you find that you're being pulled over each time for something that should have been resolved or that's a clear error on the part of CBP, you can request what's called a TRIP, Traveler Redress Information Program, where you discuss the issue, get a redress number, and put that in the system so that each time you travel and reenter, hopefully you won't be pulled into the secondary. And if you are, you tell the CBP, hey, this issue has been discussed repeatedly, it's been resolved, and you know, you need to just hopefully figure out that I don't need to be pulled aside and kept aside for several hours outside without being able to, you know, rejoin the family and the others traveling with me. As we discussed earlier, also searches of your belongings are allowed. Your suitcases can be opened, your electronic devices, your cell phones, your laptops. What are the other kinds of that we need to be concerned with here, Aaron?
So the first thing is if you're working on an H-1 or an L-1 or any employment type of position, when as an employee, when you're arriving, you should arrive during normal business hours. So the company, your end client, everybody's available. So if CBP wants to call to confirm employment, to confirm details, to make sure that everything is bona fide, they're able to make sure everything is bona fide and they're able to get a good answer to be able to move everything forward. Also, it's a good idea to be aware of online information regarding the employee and the company. So for example, if you list on your LinkedIn page, hey, this is my employer, and in fact, it's really your end client, so this can cause a lot of questions for the CBP officer, and that question can be related to employee-employer relationship, because who actually has the H-1B? Well, it's a third company, but you say you have a relationship with this company, and that can be something that can cause a major discrepancy that can actually end up being a huge issue. These are types of things that I think is very good for people to be aware of when they're coming into the U.S.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay, I know that lawful permanent residents or green card holders often are confused and don't understand why they're being questioned. So what are the kinds of issues that they need to be aware of, Chris?
Thank you, Sheila. The thing to remember is a lot of this does apply still to lawful permanent residents. You can still have your belongings searched. They can still look through your electronics to see if there's anything problematic on your electronic devices. The thing that we see most commonly with permanent residents, though, are people who have stayed outside the United States for an extended period of time. The basic rule here is if you're a permanent resident, if you stay out longer than a year, your green card is no longer a valid entry document. You still have a right to present yourself at a port of entry and ask to be admitted as a permanent resident. That's still always a possibility. The basic rule here is if you're a permanent resident, you have an unexpired green card, you can always present yourself at a port of entry and ask to be admitted. The officers at Customs and Border Protection, they do not have the authority to take your green card away. They cannot say you've been out 14 months, your green card is gone. They can threaten you with that. They can perhaps suggest that they have the power to do that, but they don't. And they cannot force you to sign the form surrendering your green card. That's called an I-407. You do not have to sign that. You can refuse to sign that. If the officers at Customs believe you've abandoned your green card, and you do not want to surrender your green card, you have an absolute right to come into the U.S. and present your case in front of an immigration judge. That's what's called an abandonment hearing in front of a judge, where you'll have an opportunity to present your case, present evidence that you did not intend to abandon your green card, that you had a valid reason for staying out that long. But that's the main thing to remember. If you're a permanent resident, you cannot be forced to sign the I-407 and surrender your green card. You can always present that case in front of an immigration judge.
Thank you, Chris. As you can see from this discussion, which we were hoping to wrap up in about 20 minutes, and I see we're past 30 minutes, which is a testament to how complicated this whole situation is, because CBP and the rights that you have or don't have, rather, at the border because you technically haven't entered the U.S., whether you're a non-immigrant or even, as you just heard from Chris, a lawful permanent resident or green card holder, can raise a lot of concerns, especially with international travel and reentering the country. But it is important to know what you have, what rights you have, and what rights you may not have. And being proactively prepared can save a lot of time, effort, and energy. As we, as Aaron Finkelstein, Chris Drynan, and myself have been explaining for the last 30-plus minutes, a stitch in time saves nine. You will actually be much, much more benefited by being more proactive in this situation. On behalf of all three of us and the entire Murthy Law Firm team, I want to thank you for joining us for today's important and valuable discussion on what to do when you have CBP-related issues for you, your family members, or your employees. But if ever you have challenges or issues, you know the best legal team in the world that can guide you and hold your hand and give you options to consider and what can and isn't possible is right here amongst our brilliant, caring, and dedicated team. So thank you for joining us today. Have a wonderful rest of your day and a good summer ahead. Take care. Bye-bye.
Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.